Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Lorre. Davis is back.
Yes, sir.
Got him standing by.
Standing by.
You bet. Hey, Davis, late last week, U.S. Meat Export Federation held their strategic planning conference and had their board of directors meeting, and we're going to hear all about it right now and some of the plans for the USMEF from Dan Hallstrom. Dan is the president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Dan, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Chip. Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
You bet. Absolutely. How'd you enjoy that weather down in Southern California?
Well, the weather actually was pretty nice. Can't complain about that. But the environment around the meeting was electric, getting everyone a couple of things. It was our 45th anniversary, and it was the first time in 2 years we've gotten our membership together in person for our board meeting. So a lot of excitement.
Yeah, fantastic. Mark Swanson is the new U.S. Meat Export Federation chair. I would imagine you're excited about working with Mark from Burco Corp.
Oh, without a doubt. Mark is our new chair that was installed on the last day of the meeting last week. And Mark and I go way back. We worked together years ago in the ConAgra days. So it's good to be back together working with such a strong supporter of our industry.
Well, and you've got a really strong officer team when you take a look at that. Dean Meyer is the chair-elect. You've got Randy Spronk on the officer team. And now Steve Hansen, a rancher from Elise, Nebraska, is the newest member on that officer team. Really strong right there, Dan. You got to be happy.
Yeah, very, very good group. Indicative of our membership, a very diversified group. Beef, pork, agribusiness, and leader in the grains industry all together.
Right.
So we're excited.
Yeah, should be. Very good. There was a lot to celebrate with U.S. meat exports over the past year, but let's talk about one of the areas where it's got the greatest momentum, it feels like, Dan, and that's in South Korea. The office has been open in South Korea now for how long?
Well, it was our 30th anniversary of our office in Korea. So, yeah, and also we're looking at record growth there. So, yeah, there's a lot of positives around the Korean market, as you know.
Yeah. How did that happen? What's been the real key to building that market up as much as it has, Dan?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Number one is persistence. I mean, we've been invested in that market for 30 years. The industry's been invested for longer. By nature, the culture is very much meat eaters. But we've had a kind of a rocky go of it. If you remember when BSE hit in 2003, that market for 3 or 4 years was at an all-time low in terms of trust and the willingness to invest in U.S. Beef in particular. And we've clawed our way back and regained that trust and regained that that confidence in U.S. beef, and U.S. pork, and at the same time, has been growing as well. And there's this little thing called the Corus Trade Agreement, which was monumental. I mean, you have to have access to grow the business. So it's a combination of having a trade agreement that was very positive for the U.S., combined with investing a lot of dollars in the market over time. And look what we have today. We have it'll be a $2 billion market this year for U.S. beef. No one would have thought we'd be anywhere close to that if you look back 10 years ago.
No, absolutely not. And boy, I hear you when you say that one of the keys here is getting on an equal footing with competitors into that Korean market, into the Japanese market. There's been other trade progress made that's giving U.S. meats more opportunity in Asia, right?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. We've got the Japan-U.S. Ag Agreement, which was implemented January of 2020. So yeah, there's a lot of positives, and of course, if you swing back over to this hemisphere or over to this area, you've got the USMCA or NAFTA 2.0, as I like to call it, which is really solidified and got us in a level playing field in North America.
Right, right. You know, that Asian market, Dan, we're always told how much it is relationship driven. How important is it that you've had the same director in place for more than 20 years in that South Korean office?
Well, I think it, you know, that sort of stability is always positive, but it really goes deeper than that. Our whole staff, I mean, and it goes for all our offices all over the world. I mean, we have these offices have databases and relationships set up over the years. And you know what happens with that. And actually, I shouldn't even say years, over decades.
Yeah.
And that trust factor is just, it's no different than doing business in the U.S. If you're a producer selling hogs or cattle, you're going to deal with people that you trust. It's the same thing in these markets, even maybe more so in the Asian culture. So very, very important, as you point out.
Right, right. The pandemic, COVID pandemic, it changed the way that Asian consumers dine, similarly to what it did here in the U.S., but there seems like there's even more resistance to going back to restaurants in Asia. Is that the right read?
Well, it is the right read. The difference is that you look at Japan and Korea, for example, our two largest markets value-wise. They had just exited their fifth wave of COVID back about a month ago in the second week of October. So really from April to October, they were in another shutdown wave where restaurants were open, but they had to be closed. There was only a certain amount of people allowed, and they closed by 8 p.m. And in the case of Japan, no alcohol was served at all. Now, anyone that's been in Japan, to imagine a restaurant without alcohol is almost unbelievable. So, you know, it's one of those deals where, yes, they've adapted. Maybe partly because they wanted to, but probably more so because they had to. And and so what we're seeing is, and Korea is a really, really good example. We've seen these e-commerce platforms absolutely boom. That drive for home delivery, for online ordering and online pickup. You know, what other options are there from traditional in-restaurant dining? And we've seen a lot of these options pop up over time.
Interesting, interesting. The shipping chaos that we are dealing with, Dan, has that created many issues for U.S. beef and pork and making their way overseas?
Yes. In fact, this is probably the biggest topic of our meeting last week. I spent quite a bit of time on it in my own speech on the opening session, and we had a panel on it on Thursday as well for a couple of hours. This isn't a new issue. This issue has been building since late last year. We started really seeing evidence of it in the first quarter of this year, 2021. And I would say in the last 3 to 6 months, finally, the rest of the U.S. is listening and waking up to the fact that we have a real issue here. So yes, business is being affected. That's number one. Originally, it was affecting us just, I would say, you know, on the fringes, you know, frozen bookings, frozen beef, frozen pork being delayed a week or two is how it started. The exporters scrambled and got things handled. But over time, when I say over time, since early 2021 until now, it's steadily gotten worse. The backups are worse. The congestion is worse. The delays in waiting for containers to be loaded and offloaded has gotten worse. And now we're looking at not only frozen beef and pork being affected, and it's not 1 or 2 weeks, it's 5 or 6 or 7 now. And now it's spilling over into the chilled pork and beef cargo, which is really, that's where it really hits the pocketbook, because our biggest push as an industry are these chilled value-added, higher-value programs. They're all based around chilled, all based around arriving and just-in-time delivery to major retailers like a Costco, like a Sam's Club, like an E-Mart in Korea. This is what's at risk. Our reliability as a, or our reputation as a reliable supplier.
Right.
If we can't deliver these chilled products week in and week out, that's a problem.
Okay. We're going to continue to monitor that situation, Dan. No question about it. We'll get back to you and get some updates as time goes on. Dan, thank you so much for making time for us.
Of course. My pleasure.
All right. That's Dan Hallstrom, president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Machine Repeats next.